Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving, and we are now fully geared up for the next holiday, the winter meetings. They're coming up fast. They begin December 9th in Las Vegas. Hopefully a lot of activity to keep us all busy there. The Yankees have been active already before the calendar hits December. They re-upped with CC Sabathia and Brett Gardner, which to most fans doesn't feel like anything because they aren't new players. The first big move to bring in a new player came earlier this month when the Yankees traded Justice Sheffield and two other prospects to Seattle for James Paxton. The 30-year-old left-hander has been one of the most intriguing pitchers in the game because of his ability. He has battled some odd injuries that have kept him from booming to the top of the list when talking about the league's best pitchers. But he's clearly a guy that was in demand when the Mariners decided to listen to offers for him. Every baseball insider will tell you that Paxton is a really good pitcher who, if he adds the durability of a 30-start season, can become a great pitcher. To learn more about Paxton, I reached out this week to Mel Stottlemyre Jr., our guest on 30 with Murdy. Mel Jr. was the pitching coach of the Mariners the last three seasons, so he knows Paxton better than anyone else in the game today. Before joining the Mariners, Mel worked in Arizona with a young Patrick Corbin, and you'll hear his thoughts on that free agent left-hander as well. And Mel also shares with us the health update on his father, Mel Stottlemyre, the longtime former pitching coach with the Mets and Yankees, honored by the Yankees with a plaque in Monument Park at Old Timers Day ceremonies in 2015. Here on a new 30 with Murdy is Mel Stottlemyre Jr. Mel, as you know, the Yankees traded for James Paxton, who you got to work with for the last couple of years. What can you tell Yankee fans about the pitcher they're getting?
Well, I mean, the first thing, I still feel like James's better days are ahead of him. We all know of the upside and the tools and everything that he possesses, and he's still learning. You know, at 30 years old, this guy's still not in his prime. I just, when he's out there and he's healthy, you know, which has been one of his dilemmas, I guess, so to speak. He can really impact the game. I know with him going there and being around guys like CeCe and guys that have done it, the impact he's going to have on that ball club. And I wish him nothing but the best. He's been, in all the years that I've been in the game of baseball, he has been, bar none, my favorite guy to work with. And, you know, I say that just watching how the growth and the pitcher and the man that he's become today and how he can change the game. They're getting not only a really, really good person, but they're getting a great pitcher.
We've seen all the numbers and, you know, you talked about the health and I'll get into that, but when you talk about work ethic, I assume has a lot to do. When a coach tells me what you just told me about Paxton being one of your favorites like that, it tells me work ethic is a big factor. What can you tell me about that?
Well, there's, you know, a lot of things. And for the guys that have spent time working with pitching staffs, we know there's a lot of things that go into it. And, you know, you spend the time and you get to know your pupils. And the one thing, the first year that I got to work with Pax, the first thing that jumped out at me is, this guy's a grinder, you know, and at times in trying to find ways to keep him healthy, we had to pull the reins back with this guy. He was always challenging himself. He's a perfectionist. He drives himself. He doesn't need others to push him. So it was a balance of just trying to not do too much with Pax. And over the course of this last season, we really found a great routine as far as what we did in between, you know, try to keep him healthy. And he had some unfortunate incidents or things that had happened that costing some games and some innings, but you know, this guy's a pitching coach's dream. Just how he prepares with the video work that he does, the physical work that he does in between to keep himself ready, and has really become a student of the game. And he's really learned that over the last couple of years. And that takes time. It takes time for young pitchers. And I, you know, although he is 30 years old, he's still learning. And, you know, we were still at a point where we're still trying to build his innings up and get him to a point to where he could make 34 starts and be that guy that everybody thought he was capable of being. And he's on his way. You know, if we would have taken a couple of the things that happened out last year and added those starts to his 160 innings, you know, he'd be a different guy. And he's figuring it out. He's right there.
What are some of the things that you introduced this past year for his between starts that you saw had a big impact?
Well, the first thing, and you know, this guy has always been very proactive in the off season and trying to find ways to, you know, succumb some of the injuries and some of the things that he's gotten through over the course of the season. So we really paid attention to evaluating his outings, into, you know, understanding what high leverage pitches and innings were, and high leverage outings and pitch counts and all that. And we took that and tried to balance it with what we did in between with his bullpens, because Pax is always a guy that loved the field work. And, you know, we all know what he did between the lines, but there was times that he overdid it in his bullpen sessions and would throw 45 to 50 high, you know, high impact, high velocity leverage pitches in his bullpen and wanting to feel that work. So we balanced that with just sitting down and having an understanding what type of outing we had and being able to balance that. And then the other thing is, you know, we start to add some analytics and some numbers to, you know, to better leverage his better pitches. And that's something that you learn over innings and, you know, situations of the game that all young pitchers go through. And some guys never get to a point to where they can understand that. And Pax this last year has a really broad understanding of what he has and what he needs to do. And, you know, we all know that over the course of 34 starts, guys aren't always going to have their stuff. And I saw a lot of times where he was able to go out and keep himself in games and keep the club in a position to win the game with his not A stuff. So he's on his way. He has a really good understanding of where his best fastball plays, the use of the secondary stuff. You know, he can read barrels. He studies videos. He's a complete guy. He just needs that next level and that next step of staying healthy over 34 starts.
Yeah, when Brian Cashman talked about acquiring a guy that had the injury history that he did, he said the plus side is it's not elbows, it's not shoulders. How frustrating was it to all of you, and I guess him specifically, but to all of you that these injuries kind of kept his progress from going as quickly as you'd hoped?
Well, to be honest with you, it didn't frustrate me as much as I think maybe the organization and sometimes fans. You know, when you're at that level and everybody knows what he was capable of doing and having that high ceiling, you know, the expectations that goes with that guy, it carries some added pressure. So I always knew, and, you know, and I went through this process of growing these innings and these outings with him. And I tried to stay patient and, you know, just try to teach him more about himself and try to find things that we can do to keep himself healthy. But with that being said, you know, when you have that ceiling and you have that impact, that frontline starter tabbed on you, you know, the expectations go up. So, you know, I too dug in and searched and tried to find with all the little things that he had. And they were never really injuries that would keep him from pitching or keep him out too long. They were always little nagging blisters. You know, the big blow this last year was he took a comebacker off his forearm. I mean, it happens. It's the game of baseball. It's what goes on between the lines, and certainly there was no way to avoid that. The other one was swinging a bat, and you know, very few people, other than a few of us that are on the inside, really understand that the impact that the little swinging the bat incident, and pulling of the rib cage muscle. I mean, this guy continued to pitch when really he probably shouldn't have been out there. And I think that shows some toughness on his side. So I get it. And, you know, the numbers and all of that didn't reach people's expectations, and sometimes it let them down. I obviously had a broad understanding of what he was dealing with. And I think that says a lot about his character and the will to want to win and to be out there and compete for his club.
Mel, what the next statement I'm going to make probably offends a few people in the game, but I know you know as well as anybody what I'm talking about here. There is a difference between being a number one type of guy in Seattle and being a number one type of guy in New York. You've seen it.
Yep.
How prepared is he for what's to come?
Well, here's what we know about Yankee Stadium. You know, we understand the impact of every game and what goes with that organization. I mean, you're talking about the greatest, you know, sports club in the history of sports. So that alone creates pressure for players. And I know, you know, having watching my dad all the years, not only pitch there and be there as a coach and kind of be in between and listen, it's a tough place. So I can tell you one thing about James is he relishes competition. He drives like no other, and he's pushed himself to be that frontline guy in a very low impact city. You know, and yet there was expectations. So he's always for me, you know, other than Felix having a guy that's done it and over the last couple, 3 or 4 years, you know, we know Felix's stuff is kind of down on a downslide. He's needed some guys around him that can kind of show him the way. And how to deal with things like that, because it is going to be something new, and there's going to be a huge expectation for James Paxton to go out and dominate. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be up for it. And, you know, until you jump in and experience it, it's hard to prepare for it. We didn't get an opportunity to go to the playoffs in the 3 years that I spent with them. And we certainly know that's a different level. But he's pitched in Boston. He's pitched in Yankee Stadium. You saw him this last year where he made a few mistakes and gave up 2 home runs. There's no doubt he's going to be able to handle it. And he's going to have a great support staff around him.
He's a guy I think everybody here is looking forward to. We talked a little bit about Andy Pettitte when people talked about comparisons. I think James throws harder. It's an easy comparison to make with the left-hander, some similarities in the delivery. Is that a fair comparison just as far as technique and attacking, or is there somebody else that kind of pops into your head when you think about him?
No, you know, when I think Andy Pettitte's a great comparison, and I know their stuff might be a little different, but, you know, they both had that high front side. They both were tenacious workers, and Andy was one of my dad's very favorite. And when you're talking about being a favorite, you know, from a pitching coach that's been around for a long time, you're doing a lot of good things. And I know one thing about my dad, he loves workers. So there is a lot of comparisons. You know, looking at the stuff, you know, Paxton's got that high fastball that he can run up to the high 90s. I've seen him hit 100. And he has that curveball that he can throw off that same plane, and he's got that wipeout cutter. So he's really, this last couple of years, he's really learned the value of having those weapons and how to use them and how they impact, you know, high leverage pitches and situations and how to get in and out of jams. So that's something that Andy was really good at. You know, Andy stayed healthy for a lot of years. And was the guy in New York that I think that everybody looked up to and could count on. And I think Pax is just in the beginning phases of of that development part. So he's, like I said, he's still learning. He's in a much better place over this last year from where he was a few years ago, where I'm not going to say he was in the search mode, but he was still learning about himself. And you get that with innings, experience, you know, starts, games, getting your butt kicked, pitching in big games, and you learn all those things as a young pitcher that eventually will help shape you and mold you.
Mel, you have a little history with one of the other guys that's on the market right now that the Yankees have had some interest in, and there's a possibility he ends up here as well. Patrick Corbin is a free agent from Arizona. Before joining the Mariners, you spent some years in the Arizona organization. What can you tell me about Patrick Corbin and kind of the same stuff we're talking about here with Paxton, his, you know, what he does and what his ability might be to pitch here?
Oh, you sound like you're fishing. I'm going to tell you what. Those are two guys in the same mold, that come out of the same mold. And I know Patrick Corbin put together a phenomenal year this year. And, you know, he probably in his younger days or coming up probably didn't have that feeling of a guy like James Paxton. But I would throw him into the category of all the things that Andy Pettit does and what made him and defined him. I would throw Patrick Corbin in that group as well. That would be a devastating rotation with an unbelievable offensive ball club. And you could sign me up to choose the Yankees to win that division.
that would be the next stop. You like his mentality? I mean, same thing, you know, pitching out west and not a lot of attention throughout the course of his career. you would like his ability to pitch in this environment?
Well, you know, the one thing that you don't know, that people don't know about players, and you know, unless you've gotten in the trenches with them and actually took the time to where they trust you and you got to learn about them, you know, there's some little defined attributes or strengths or whatever you want to call them that guys, they either possess or they don't. They're big game pitchers or they're not. They're hard workers or they don't work hard. You know, they push themselves, or they're a guy that needs to have their foot up somebody's booty sometime. Patrick's that guy. And, you know, I tell you what, the kid's from the Northeast, and that's where he's from. Yeah. He's from back that way. Are tough, tough kids. And when I was in player development, you know, you look at where kids come from demographically, and you look at their upbringing and what drives them and makes them tick, and, you know, the ability to work through trouble and not cave. I mean, he's that guy. I love Patrick Corbin. I know at one time when I was over in Seattle, they mentioned his name and my eyeball about popped out. Thinking of the possibility of having a guy at that magnitude. So, no, they have not pitched in Yankee Stadium and in that environment. And they've been out west where things are a little quieter, but he's got the makings to be that guy if they can get him. And he's another one, like I say, that he's a lot like James as far as his work habits. And he's had some good teachers over there. You know, he had Dan Heron this last year, who does a wonderful job with the scouting reports and game planning. And so he's not only a bright guy, he's got all the physical tools and preparation and everything it takes to be a good one.
Mel, I know that New York has always been kind of a home away from home for you because of all the years your dad spent here. And you really, both fan bases, the Mets and the Yankees fans, owe a lot to him and what he did in helping bring championships here. It's been a couple of years since we saw him here. I think Old Timers Day a few years ago, where he was honored. There was some other ceremonies the last couple of years that I know he wasn't able to make. For the fans that are listening that, you know, followed along with your dad's story, what can you tell us about him health-wise and how he's been doing?
Well, you know, we all know the disease has been fighting since 2000, and he's continuing to battle. We're trying, and we're in new trial studies with different drugs, and he's in uncharted territory. When he was diagnosed with myeloma, you know, they gave him 3 to 4 years to live, and he's 18 years down the road. So I can only tell you what New York and what the fans and everything has meant to him. It really does keep pushing him in life. He still talks about the day that we all went back and they called him out there and put his number out, you know, out in center field, and the impact that it's had on him. He still talks about that day. I think of all the great things that he's done in the game in New York, both as a pitcher and a coach, that day was probably the most special for him and the family as well. So, you know, he's got some ups and downs and rides that roller coaster, but his favorite thing, you know, other than his family and what he's done for the state of New York, his favorite thing in life to do is fish. So that's kind of the thing that when he gets down and he's going through some tough times, we talk about that, and then it pushes him to keep going and try to have some quality of life. But he's really, really hoping, and I talked to my mom about this over Thanksgiving, to try to get back to another old-timers game.
Hmm. Can I tell you a little secret? I'm so glad it didn't happen, but I almost ruined the secret for him on old-timers day because I saw him in the dugout, and we were just chatting for a minute, and I almost said to him, hey, good luck, enjoy this. And something told me, wait a second, I think this is a surprise. So I just kind of shook his hand and walked away. And I'm so glad I didn't say anything. I kept thinking to this day, I'm still thinking, man, I almost blew that whole thing. But it sounds like that was such a special day.
You know what? He was completely thrown off and so surprised. And, you know, I had asked for permission from Arizona to take the day off. I knew how special this was going to be for the family and for my dad. And I was over in the opposing dugout kind of watching and looking over from the other side, and I already knew what was going to happen. And he had no idea. He was so oblivious to it. And I think he was right at the tail end. Mm-hmm. He had already called everybody out, and he might have looked over. I think he said something to Gino. And he goes, you know, what's going on? I think they left me out. and then they called his name out. Man, that was so cool. So cool. You know, the town or the city of New York and the Yankees organization and how they treat their people is second to none. And, man, they've really, really taken care of my dad and our family.
You know, Mel, I know that, you know, you mentioned maybe coming to an old-timers day. There's another day that's happening next July where, you know, Mariano Rivera is on the Hall of Fame ballot, and I think we all know that he's going to get in here, and that there's going to be a wonderful day to celebrate him in Cooperstown next July. Do you have that circle on the calendar? I know you guys have both taken a few rides on your boat mowing the ninth. Have you guys talked about circling that date on the calendar and maybe making a trip for that?
Well, I will, and I'm going to pass it on. You know, my mom, you know, does all his scheduling and stuff. And there's times when, you know, the chemo is really set in, and we call it, you know, chemo brain, where my dad just doesn't know the days, and even on some cases doesn't even know what year it is. And I know it sounds terrible, but it just kind of it goes with the territory and the disease he's fighting. But I'm going to circle that day, and I can tell you, you know, when you sit down and you talk with my dad about the favorite people and all the greats that he's coached, you know, you mentioned one, Danny Pettit, and the other is Mariano Rivera. And when my dad retired, I remember Joe Torre called me up, and they talked about getting him a ring. And I thought, you know what? The ring would be special. It would go in his safe. But if you really want to hit a home run with my pops, his second passion of life behind baseball is fishing. And so they built the boat. Mo stepped up, Jeter, Joe, and I think Zim was in on it, Gino, and there were some others that all divvied up, and we built my dad a boat, and we called it Mo in the Night. So they all had a little personal saying on there. They still sit there today, and when he gets an opportunity to go out and fish, I guarantee he looks at those and reflects back and realizes what a wonderful life and career he's had.
Mel, you are not coming back next year. You had 3 years as the Mariners pitching coach. Can you reflect on that a little bit? And how disappointed are you that you're not coming back?
Well, you know how baseball is and how things work out. It seems like managers and pitching coaches are always on the hot seat. And we had a good season. We were right at 90 wins. And, yeah, there was some disappointment. You know, it doesn't – things – just the way that they work out in the game, and sometimes you get difference of opinions and you have differences and you have to part ways. Never regretted going to Seattle. You know, it gave me an opportunity to spend 3 years with my family, something I hadn't done. I've been in Arizona for 18 years. I've gone through a few interviews this winter. I'm getting ready to fly down to a place tomorrow that I think both the club and myself might be serious about, going to work for, and I won't mention that club now, but I still have passion and fire to keep coaching and doing my thing in the game, and my family still wants me to keep doing that as well. So it was good times. I have no regrets.
That's fantastic. Listen, I want to ask you one other thing about a member of the guy that you coached with is also kind of on the border here and I think is going to get into the Hall of Fame this year, but Edgar Martinez, you shared some time with him these last couple of years. What, you know, yeah, I mean, he was somewhat of a contemporary, and I know you know what he did as a player. When you look back at your time spent with him and what this might mean to him, what do you think about the possibility of Edgar Martinez calling himself a Hall of Famer in a few weeks?
Well, the one thing about Edgar, if you get to know him, is you know really – oh, how proud he is as a man and, you know, as a guy that impacted the game in the DH position. And he's very humble. He's a lot like my dad. He never likes to talk about himself or what he's done in this game. And I learned a lot in the 3 years sitting next to him in his locker and just admiring the patience that he has with players and the respect that the guys that he worked with, that kind of that look in their eye and that mutual respect that they had for each other. And, you know, Edgar was a special talent, just how his thought process, and people don't realize. And although he was a DH, the tireless work that he put into his trade. And, you know, he doesn't talk about being a Hall of Famer much. I'll be honest with you. We did a little tribute to him last year when they retired his number, and he was almost a little embarrassed. You know, he doesn't need that credit or for people to put him up on a pedestal. Although we know, being baseball people and fans, what he did for the game and how he impacted it, and what a great person and what a great coach. And I know he stepped down this year along with Scott Brosius, and is gonna impact the organization in a different capacity now, but still staying involved. But one of my, you know, I've been coaching for quite a while now, but one of my all time favorite coach mates. Just completely respect and admire the man.
Mel, thanks for all the insight here, and I know New York fans are going to appreciate it, and for all the fans in New York who have a lot of admiration for your dad and your mom, for that matter, please give them all a big hug from all of us here in New York. Thank you.
Sweeney, I appreciate it. We love New York and what they've meant to our family, and that'll never go away.
Our thanks to Mel Stottlemyer Jr. Hope to see him back with another team soon. One thing I've spoken with him about before but didn't get to here was when Mel Jr. made his Major League debut in 1990, it came in a pretty spectacular game. It was in July 1990 at Yankee Stadium, Royals versus the Yankees. It was the game in which Bo Jackson hit 3 home runs for Kansas City before diving for a ball and leaving the game with a dislocated shoulder. That ball that he dove for was hit by Deion Sanders, and it got past Bo's dive and went for an inside the park home run. That home run was given up by Mel Jr. in his first major league inning. More on that another time. Thank you all for listening. Head to iTunes for our archive and check out past episodes. You can also find us at WFAN.com and the radio.com app. Until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.